turn to Genesis chapter 16. I knew it'd come to me in a minute. As we wrapped up chapter 15 last week, we saw the Lord dealing with Abram, telling him again that he was going to give him this land, that his seed was going to inherit this land, that he was going to make his seed a great nation. If you've been counting, this is the fourth time that God has said something to Abraham about inheriting the land and or his seed inheriting this land in the future. So up to now, we've had four times that the Lord has said something to him. We also got some information regarding that in chapter 15. The Lord's Abram says, well, I'm old. I don't have any children. Maybe you're going to work through the customs of the day, and the head of my household, his child, if I'm fatherless, becomes my heir. And God says, oh, no, we're not doing that. I told you it's going to be your seed. It's going to be a child of yours. So Abram is given that information. And then in the last part of verse 15, or chapter 15, after he goes through that ceremony we talked about last week, the Lord said unto him, I've made this covenant. And again, remember that ceremony that they went through. God was the only one that passed between the animals, which meant God was the one responsible for carrying this out, that it didn't depend on Abram. And again, verse 18, the fourth time he says, unto thy seed I have given this land from the river Egypt, under the great river Euphrates. And then he lists several tribes that are in this land already. I've given those to you as well. Go and conquer. This is what I'm giving to you. Then we come to chapter 16. It says, after all this has taken place, and again, we don't know what period of time between this vision that God has given to Abram and Sarai, her name hasn't changed yet. And again, husbands and wives, you talk to your husband, you talk to your wife. I'm sure that Sarai was completely aware of these promises that God had given to Abram. I doubt highly that he would withhold this information from her. So she was aware of God's plan and what he was going to do. Let's read part of this here. It says, now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. Now Sarai said unto Abram, behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go into my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband, and Abram to be his wife. We're going to stop there for a minute. So what do we see taking place here? It's been how long? Did you catch that?
10 years
since they've been in the land. So they've been 10 years that they've been waiting for God to fulfill this promise. And God has told them how many times again? Four times. I'm going to do this. Do you know how old Abram and Sarai are at this point? They're 85 and 75. So they're thinking what? Okay, I'm a little old for this, huh? And obviously that's what she's thinking. So Sarai comes up with this plan. She says, I have no children, but I have a handmaid. This handmaid is, what's it say? Who?
An Egyptian.
Where do you think she came up with this Egyptian handmaid? Probably while they were in Egypt, okay? So this handmaid means basically a servant, slave, whatever, however you want to put it. I have this person that attends to me that I brought out of Egypt. Do you get kind of the implication that Abram's trip and decision to go to Egypt is still coming back to haunt him? Yeah. I mean, after all, if she didn't have an Egyptian handmaid, she wouldn't be able to say to Abram, have a child by her. By the way, how does this exactly work? Well, basically, she figured if I have a handmaid through her, then it becomes his descendant, and that's how God's going to provide. interesting here, and Sarai says, verse 2, said unto Abraham, behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. Is that true? Yes, it's true. She also could have said, I have no children at this point, right? Interesting who she brings into this concept of how this is going to work, right? She brings the Lord's name into this, even though she's figured out a plan how I'm going to work this out. And you, pardon me? Well, I was going to say, and humanly speaking, who can blame her, right? What's the Lord waiting for? I mean, goodness sakes, he told me this 10 years ago and it hasn't happened yet. Must mean it's not going to happen and I got to figure out how to do that. Exactly. God desires us to be patient. We're going to talk about some of this later, but God has made a promise. He will accomplish that promise no matter what the timing is. Sometimes God waits for things to be impossible to happen so that when they happen, we know who did them. Right, exactly. There's no other explanation except God. And many times that's how God works. The situation comes to the point where, humanly speaking, you say, oh, it's impossible, you waited too long. And then what happens? God accomplishes his desired goal anyhow, despite us. So some may say, well, yeah, I understand why she did this. Sure, she'd waited 10 years, hadn't seen anything happen. And bearing children was an important part of their culture back then. Why is that? Because remember we talked about they basically lived in tribes and groups. So your group was your family and your, if you would, employees and or whoever was in with your group. So the more children you had, the bigger your tribe, right? So it was extremely important in those days. So obviously she understands she's getting older. Abram understands he's getting older. She comes to him and she says, hey, I've got a solution. Go to my handmaid, have a child by her. This can be the heir. You see a flaw in her thinking? What's God's plan for husbands and wives?
One man, one woman.
That's right. Not one and two, not one and three, not one and four. So already, if she had stopped to think this through, she were to realize, well, wait a minute, I'm going against God's plan. Let me put it this way. God's desired or perfect will does not involve going against his statutes. Now, God works in lives of people, and anybody here perfect? I didn't see a hand. That's good. God works through us, imperfect people, in imperfect situations, doing imperfect things, but God still works. It doesn't mean that God can't work, but obviously his desired will for this would have been that Abram and Sarai waited until God provided. And how much better would it the outcome have been had they been patient enough to wait? Of course, I can't really point the fingers at them without pointing fingers at me, because many times I'm impatient as well, right? And we live in a world of instant gratification, and that doesn't make it any better. We desire to have, and we have it right away, and we don't understand that waiting many times. Pastor.
I perfectly agree with you what you're talking about. God's design, Abram and Sarai waiting. And we know God's will, one man, one woman. But one of the big mysteries I have, it's an unanswered one in my mind, is how God blessed the children of Israel, 12 tribes, one man, four women.
Right, right.
I don't have an answer for that one.
I think God, and I'll mention, God works through imperfect people in imperfect circumstances. I mean, we're all sinners, right? None of us are perfect. None of us always do what we're supposed to do, although so we're supposed to be working towards that. But God still works. If he was waiting for perfect circumstances, how much would he get accomplished? Waiting for us to do everything right all the time. He probably wouldn't. Which, again, why we have God's desired will or perfect will, and then God's allowed or acceptable will, what he allows to happen and still works through us, understanding who he's working with, imperfect people. But yes, I thought about that as well. And actually, we're going to mention that in a minute, too. Go ahead.
I kind of see what we're talking about is part of our problem as well. We don't want to wait. We want to answer right now.
Yeah.
And jump ahead of God.
Another thing you see here, this circumstance that she is putting them in is acceptable in that day, right? So according to the world standard, this was completely legit and upright. According to whose standards of the day? Man's standard, the world standards. Are there things that are acceptable today that God does not condone? Yeah, you've been sleeping. Wake up. Yeah, exactly. So if we're going to figure out God's plan and help him out, which we shouldn't be doing, let's definitely not use the standards of the day. And what's acceptable to man is not necessarily acceptable to God. So we see here Sarai saying, we're going to obtain a child through him. That's how we're going to work this out. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. So Abram's not innocent in this situation. Abram could have said,
no.
He could have said no. Somebody else listened. Somebody else listened to their wife and turned out making a wrong decision. Who was that? Adam. Right? Now, hold on a minute here. I'm not saying don't listen to your wife, okay? We are to listen to our spouses and their wisdom, because God gives our spouses wisdom. But there are times when maybe that's not a good idea. And whose responsibility ultimately is this decision?
The man.
The man's decision. Yeah. Yep. So, Abram's not innocent in here. Abram says, oh, maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, God said it's going to be someone that I father. Maybe you're right. So, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her handmaid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt in the land 10 years, and gave her to her husband, to Abram, to be his wife. So now he's got two wives, polygamy. Anybody know what that creates? I see you shaking your head. You know what that creates, don't you? Let's go on. So verse 4, he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. Is anybody shocked at this? Huh? Yeah, only Sarah. Let's continue. And Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid to thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. And the Lord judge between me and thee. Interesting statement here. Do you know what Sarai's doing? Yeah, she got mad at Abram. She said, you know what she's saying here? Really? This is all your fault. This is your fault that this happened. That's what she's saying.
That's the John Field version.
Yes. I came looking through different sources. Here's kind of an explanation of this as well. Sarai considers herself wronged by Hagar, which she was, because Hagar, wife number two, bore a child before Sarai did. And if you look at it this way, Sarai and Abram and maybe some of those who are with them are, if you would call, believers, right? They believe in God and his direction and his guidance, and that there is an almighty God. This Egyptian, it doesn't say anything about her believing in God and him directing Abram. So we don't know. This could be an unbeliever altogether. But anyhow, it says, Sarai considers herself wronged by Hagar and blames the matter on Abram. May the wrong done me be upon thee, verse 5. Hagar's pregnancy achieved Sarai's purpose. That's what she wanted, right? Right? She wanted Hagar to have a child, and that child would be the heir that God was intending. That would be the beginning of this great nation that God was going to make out of Abram. So she got what she wanted, right? She got a little more than what she wanted. But the slave's disrespectfulness provoked regret and cry for help. Sarai directs her anger at Abram. Her view is that Abram had agreed to her suggestion and had caused Hagar's pregnancy. Therefore, he was responsible. And he does bear some responsibility here. Sarai urges him to deal with Hagar because of her behavior. In other words, Sarai was saying, I've been wronged and you must answer for it. Sarai's human solution to her barrenness has also created new problems. And then Sarai declares that she wanted the Lord to judge between you and me. Let the Lord decide who's wrong here. Again, interesting, who does she bring into this plan? You know, when he had nothing to do with this, right? You don't see Sarai praying to God and getting an answer. You don't see Abram saying, I'm going to pray about this first before I do this. Nope, they just both jump in and make this decision, and then they want to bring the Lord into it.
I see the devil's business. The original Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. And we do the same thing. We think, I'm going to do this. This is what will cure the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or creates a bigger problem.
So we can't really blame. We can blame them both.
Yeah.
Like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Praying to the Lord and waiting for an answer.
Right. They both bear responsibility. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say they left God out of the equation at the beginning, and then turned it on the tail end, which is very typical of even situations in the modern day.
Mm-hmm. Where, yep.
There's a scenario. We don't involve God at all, then the tail end, we cry out, like, why?
Yeah.
The context is different, but Psalm 106 explains this, verse 15. He gave them their request, but sent leanness
mm-hmm.
into their soul.
Mm-hmm.
That's Sarai.
Yep, exactly.
She got what she wanted, and now she turned against
it. Yeah. So, what does Abram do? Abram, verse 6, but Abram said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand, do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her face. Abram says, that's what he's saying. He said, leave me out of this. You know, this mess that's been created here, you do whatever you want. I'll let you. Now, legally, she couldn't sell her or get rid of her on top of the fact that it was Abram's child, right? And they still assumed that this was the beginning of the nation that God was going to create through them. But he says, you know what? However you want to treat her, go ahead. I give you permission. So that's wrong as well. So he's basically saying, you know, I've got two wives now. First wife doesn't like second wife. You go ahead and treat her however you want. And just, you know, basically, I'm backing out of this. Just leave me out of this. I don't want to deal with this. So, you're right. They got what they wanted, but God sent leanness to their souls. In other words, it created a bigger problem. Again, deciding to try to make God, trying to be God, and I'm going to work out this circumstance because I don't see God making any progress here. And I've got to do something to help this situation out. Now, there may be times, there may be circumstances where God directs you to intervene in a situation, and that's his desire and his will, and we should do that. But to work things out on our own, and again, we don't see Sarai going to God and saying, what should I do? We don't say Abram going to God and saying, what should I do? Which, if they had, probably would have changed the complete story here, right?
Absolutely.
Same as we do. Many times we make decisions based on whatever circumstances, maybe based on, well, this is acceptable. The world says this is acceptable. This must be okay. And we go ahead without asking first. Just like Abram went into Egypt without asking. So, she says, go ahead and deal with her however you want. And Sarai dealt hardly or harshly with her, and she fled from her face. So, Sarai decides she's going to be mean, and Hagar takes off. As she's has left, it says, and the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's handmaid, whence comest thou, and whither will you go? She said, I flee from the face of my mistress. Where did you come from, and where are you headed? Did you think this out? Here you are, this handmaid that has left, and you're traveling around by yourself, pregnant. So he says, where'd you come from? Where are you going? She says, I've fleed from my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress and submit thyself under her hands. So the angel of the Lord says to Sarai, you need to turn around and go back. Hagar, turn around and go back. And what?
I'm going to take care of you.
Yes. He tells her a little on, but what's he tell her?
Submit,
exactly. You need to change your attitude and submit to your mistress. So that's what he tells her. But he also tells her, and the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, and it shall not be numbered for multitude. In other words, you're going to have a lot of descendants from this child as well. He also says to her, and the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son. So he tells her It's going to be a son, not a daughter. Some more information. And you shall call his name Ishmael, which means, do you know what Ishmael means? God hears. God heard her cries in the wilderness. Because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. Some more information that he gives to her. And he will be a wild man, and his hand will be against every man, and every man's against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Do you know who the descendants of Ishmael are?
I witnessed them.
Do what? You witnessed them?
The Palestinians and all their Arab nations. This is
the they fit that description?
Exactly. Worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're worse than animals. They're just plain evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable what they did a year ago.
Yeah. Yep.
Unbelievable.
That's the descendants of Ishmael, the Arab nation. And they are always at war with others, and they're always at war with themselves as well. Pastor.
And what you have reminded us in your lesson, several weeks, Abram, the consequences of going to Egypt without the Lord carried over. This was consequences of going ahead of the Lord and not waiting on the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And fathered what became the 12 Arab nations, because Ishmael is going to have 12 sons, and they are all of the Arab Palestinian nations that have been nothing but trouble for God's home.
Yep.
And where did this come from? Thank you, Abram.
Yeah. Yep. Well, not that we could have done a whole lot better, but you're right. That is the source of this irritation to Israel since here. But God is gracious, and he says, and she called upon the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me, for she said, I have also here looked after him that seeth me. Wherefore the well was called Beer Lahai Roy, behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. So this is where she was at. Scripture is given to us to learn from. I think we got a lot of lessons that we can learn from what took place here and make sure that we apply them to our individual lives as we're here. Lord bless you this morning. We'll dismiss. We'll continue next week.